And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that local shouting, it's Danger.
Dave Ninemitz.
It's Danger.
Dave Ninemitz.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Alan Paulino Jr. and Dave Ninemitz of The Athletic are excited to be with you on our first off-season edition of the podcast. Although it feels kind of, it kind of feels the same, Dave, because like it's just as much to dive into. There's yeah. just as much to talk about, if not more. It's just, it's kind of just like a fresh start. So I hate when people are like, what do you do in the off season? What are you gonna do in the off season? I'm like, this is called my busy season starting now. Like
there's
this
a case there's a case to be made from the final game until I don't know what, after OTAs maybe, that it's busier than any other time of year.
I don't want to have to bring this up here, but we have pretty high expectations for your output to continue, even though you're burnt to a crisp.
The best is the rush for everybody to use all their vacation in a 2 month span.
Yeah.
Because it's like the one window you could actually go anywhere. We're like that scene in what's the Brad Pitt zombie movie where all the zombies are climbing up the wall.
Yeah, you know me, big Brad Pitt zombie movie guy. Come on.
God, I gotta back that up to more of an 80s zombie movie, don't I?
It doesn't have to involve zombies.
World War Z. You've never seen World War Z?
No. I'm not a zombie movie guy. Yeah. I didn't even watch the zombie. I didn't really watch the zombie show. What was the zombie show everyone loved?
Oh, Walking Dead. Yeah, I didn't get into that. Really but Zombieland. Have you seen Zombieland?
No. Why is that the whole land of them?
Go watch Zombieland. That's at least funny.
Dave, we've got a lot to get to in this podcast. We can't spend the whole time talking about the cinematic history of zombies.
Is it worse than aliens? I don't know.
We'll get to that too. Don't worry. There's big news there. All right. Mo will join us. And we'll talk about more than just the Miami Mall incident. But we've got plenty to talk about there. But what I want to do here is look, we're coming off of Monday where Joe Burrow spoke. He had many interesting things to say. We had locker room clean out. We talked to a number of pretty much touch base with all of the pending free agents out, except really T. Higgins over the last week and a half. And we've got a good feel now for all of that. I think we can take a snapshot of the offseason today. We've got plenty of time for deeper dives into specific topics that I think that we'll do as we get going. But I think what I want to do is try to touch on everything for now. And then we can take specific topics and dissect them a little deeper. But I feel like I have a pretty good feel for where things are probably going to go. So we go through it, right? We just go chronologically through it. Do we like chronological here?
Yeah.
You're pro chronological.
I mean, it's better than alphabetical.
Although that's coming. I'm glad you said that, because I have my one thought on all 60, when it be in 61 players to play at least one game with the Bengals this year. And I decided to go alphabetical this year.
All right.
I went alphabetical. So look forward to that coming your way.
I'm excited.
So got that as well, because every time I love doing that, because so many times those of you listen or read or whatever, or I see people out, what do you think about this guy?
And here's my answer to all of you. My one thing that pops into my head on each one of those guys. So that's coming your way as well this week. I have a story up from the game on Tyler Boyd and sort of his impact on this team as they look forward potentially to being without him. And then a story up on what Joe Burrow said about T. Higgins yesterday. Let's start there. Joe Burrow speaks. Good to see you. Hello, Joe. He says, health-wise, I know that's what most people are concerned about. The expectation is that he's throwing by OTAs and good to go there. But it's still a long ways out. You know, he's not able to like grip or do any lifting. He's doing all his workout stuff is a lot of lower body and then ways to work around upper body stuff. So he's not out there doing this. Vice grips, right? And that's what we need. We were joking around with some of the content people with Bengals who are like, are they going to have some sort of slow motion of Burrow on vice grips for like 20 minutes? You know, because it's different when you're doing an ACL rehab or when you're doing one of these other, like it's, you know, when he's running in the pool or he's doing all this stuff, like that stuff is visually appealing, but like just like working a wrist tendon isn't quite as engaging. The newsy part of that is I think there is an expectation that he'll be throwing in some capacity or hopefully full go during the offseason program. And then certainly we're just kind of taking that out where, you know, full go, fully prepared to, they hope, rock a healthy training camp next year without any issue.
Yeah, and it would seem, as opposed to the calf or knee or anything like that, like once he's thrown the ball a few times, we're going to know it's going to look good or not, I would think. It's not going to be like watching a calf that has to build back up and you never know when it should. But who knows? Injuries are injuries.
Who knows is right. I mean, you know, it's like I don't know. I don't know. Is there going to be concern that all of a sudden on like June 10th on his 14th throw, it's like pop again? Sorry. I'm sorry, fans. Well, I know you're sitting here the month. You're going to have to watch every other team in the North play in the playoffs. And I'm here talking about wrist popping.
I'm trying to be optimistic about it, but I was shot. That was winced at for those who can't see the video. Will the thumb hype video make you feel better once that's out?
Giving the thumbs up over and over again.
Thumb wrestling, maybe over the top theme song. There's an 80s movie for you.
who would Burrow have to arm wrestle in this Jake Browning?
It'd be thumb wrestling. It'd be
thumb wrestling. I want to see a full arm wrestling as well. Get the full wrist, because if you watched Over the Top, Dave, you know the key is turning the wrist. Boom, that's what it is.
I brought it up. I know. maybe the hype video will make you feel more.
That's what I want. I want Joe Mixon versus Joe Burrow in a arm wrestling contest for the right for Burrow to come back. All right, so there's that. I'm going to get to the T comments in a second. Again, I have a story up on that and what that means, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I want to just tick through a few other things that are kind of going on before we go through what that means. Coaching staff from Zach Taylor intact is the expectation, barring obviously promotions. So Brian Callahan already is on the interview list for the Carolina job. I think there's an expectation that he'll probably have another interview, maybe two. Keep an eye on Washington there, potentially, whenever that thing gets cooking. Oh, you know, there's everything is pushed back a couple of weeks right now. They're not allowing any interviews in person or anything like that until you get 2 weeks later, because they're just, everything's going to be a little slower. A lot of these jobs that are open are both GM and head coach. Those GMs can interview, so you're seeing a lot of the GM searches start to move faster, and potentially they would hit those and then move on to the head coaches. There's still a lot of balls that need to be dropped where you're talking about Mike Vrabel still out there, Bill Belichick. What's going to happen with these guys? I mean, so you got these five jobs open now. And so there's still plenty of time for that to percolate and the dominoes to fall. But, you know, I think the big part of that from a Bengals perspective is an expectation that, you know, they would love the idea that they're going to retain this entire staff outside of filling in if people get jobs. On that note, Dan Pitcher, I still think is most likely, I mentioned this on the walkout, to potentially get a gig. He deserves to be an OC. If Brian Callahan were to get a head coaching job, Dan Pitcher would be the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati tomorrow. I think that line has sort of been in place and was part of his return last year when he could have potentially gone to Tampa Bay. Is that, look, bring Dan Pitcher back here. Maybe next year he steps into the OC role here. But either way, you know, it's time for him to be an OC somewhere. He deserves that and is ready for it. But it's a matter of getting that gig. If not, he comes back and he stays here another year. Who knows? Maybe they could remarkably bring their entire staff back for year six.
Well, let me ask you, because we've talked about that. I mean, we talk about it each year and it kind of builds momentum. This continuity is an advantage they have. Do you think there's any advantage to mixing it up some and having somebody, I'm not saying run the staff out or change coordinators, but is it worth having some new voices and new people on that staff? Or is it, do you think it's better to just keep going if you can get everybody back?
I think that they could use a couple new voices maybe, but yeah. Not in the major, I don't know how much it matters, but not in major positions. I don't think. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, a few extra people in a positional room or whatever, I don't know. I think they've done a pretty good job of communicating, of motivating. I mean, this was a team that I thought had the fight in them to the end, and mm-hmm. I know fans kind of, you know, don't really care about that sometimes. But I think with this team, that was kind of the judgment factor when they didn't have Burrow. And so I feel like that aspect of it is in a good place. And you feel like you have people there who are connecting to their rooms. I wouldn't want to mix it up too much. I don't mind new voices and new energy. And I think they do need to find some freshness. And Zach Taylor admitted that yesterday, like he needs to find ways to freshen things up a little bit because he has been here now. I mean, you're talking about a lot of the same messages for some of these people, and he needs to cultivate leadership. He needs to keep it fresh for some of the people that have been here. And I think that could potentially be a way with a few new voices.
Yeah. I mean, the alternative to that is turnover with your players. So new guys hear the old message, but I just think it's interesting that it's something we've talked about a lot, and I think you can certainly point to the advantages of having that continuity, but I think a case can be made for some new blood being in there in some capacity and kind of shaking it up some.
Yep. So the next order of business, whenever everything falls or doesn't fall with the coaching staff, and that all will happen over the next month. And over this next month, the Bengals staff will take some vacations, obviously, and really kind of dive in to the next step of this offseason and how are they going to reform this roster? They have a lot of holes. They have their own guys. Okay. So let's start there. We've talked through some of these. We're going to talk about the big six here. As I'm calling that, 'cause you know what? I love church festivals and I love big six, and who doesn't love the sound? Like if I had more time or, you know, like a producer or something, I'd be like, all right, spin me the big six wheel sound, right? I need it. And we'd spin and land on one and I'd give my opinion. So unless you were like the guy from Police Academy who can do all the sounds, Hightower, is that his name? Whatever his name was, that guy. Are you that guy?
I'm more like Tackleberry. I'm O-Fish. Hightower, that was Too Tall Jones, wasn't it?
I don't think that guy though. You know who I'm talking
about. I know that Michael Winslow. Yeah.
Come on, Police Academy fans. the three of you that listen to this podcast.
I'm not
Big Six. Yeah. Big Six sound, you know, that's terrible. See, I can't do it.
That was pretty good.
No, it wasn't. All right. It lands on T. Higgins because, of course, it has to. This is the main topic of yesterday. Joe Burrow, I expect T. Higgins back. Plain as day.
Yeah.
Plain as could be said. And sort of the point of my column that I wrote yesterday and just sort of, you know, the conversations you have about that type of stuff are, this is not, you know, no offense, Travion Williams. This is not Travion Williams talking about, I mean, I think T's going to be back, right? This is Joe Burrow. In every conversation, when moves need to be made, he gets a call. He's in the office. He's structuring his contract to make these things work. He is, it's the equivalent of Duke Tobin saying this, as far as I'm concerned. I expect T. Higgins back. Now, pointed out, this is him speaking, but he said all of us have the expectation that T. Higgins is going to be back. That one, you know, he even said, offseason's crazy, like free agency's crazy. You never know exactly what's going to happen. But the Bengals hold the card that matters here. Like, if Joe Burrow's expectation and this front office's expectation, if Burrow's speaking kind of on the idea of this is how the front office feels, this is what's going to happen, well, they have the card to play. Okay? Yeah. The franchise tag is there. 1 year, 21 and some change. And it's a big number. But, I mean, that's who they are. That's who the Bengals are. Are the Bengals anything other than Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins? That's who they are as a team. So, 1 year, franchise tag, T. Higgins back. And that's sort of how I took what Joe Burrow said yesterday, is that we're all under the expectation that T's going to be here because he's going to be on the franchise tag or he's going to sign a long-term deal. The end.
And then they'd have the tag and trade option too. So if they tag him, it seems like it keeps the options open a little bit more for him.
That's correct. Yeah. So that is the other part of this. But to me, the part of what Joe said kind of wiped a lot of tag and trade off the table.
Yeah.
And said, no, like, not interested in tag and trade. And because, and one, you're the tag and the trade situation. And again, we're not going full deep into this, but like you're talking about a guy who had some injury stuff is now multiple. He's got this, you're still not getting full seasons out of T. Higgins. He's battled a lot of injuries. And so you're trying to find value. What are you going to get for somebody who has to give up something and pay T. Higgins what he wants, which we know is a lot? I mean, the Bengals offered him last year and a nice offer and he didn't want it. Well, his camp was uninterested. We've kind of gone down this road. So you got to be willing to pay whatever their asking price is, which is obviously very high, and give up something for a guy who is great, but does have some injury history for multiple years. The devaluing of what you can get back because of those circumstances happens. Okay. So, and Joe Burrow saying, I expect T. Higgins back. I expect requisite value via trade.
Be amazing if he said that.
And run that damn thing back with these three guys, which we never really got to see for but 121 snaps this whole season. 121 snaps, by the way, that would have made them the number one offense in football during those snaps. Side note. So to me, I hesitate to say anything definitively. I feel like Joe Burrow up there right now. Yes, we'll see. Crazy things happen. But I now, too, because of Joe Burrow, fully expect franchise tag on T. Higgins or long-term deal agreed to before they place that on.
Well, and as you pointed out in the story, this is also a matter of the weight that Burrow has with the team, and that he's very calculated in what he says and does. He's not a guy up there just shooting from the hip, just saying whatever. So if he said that, he's thought about it. I guess my question to you, and it's hard to say because I don't know what conversations you've had with T, But does T strike you as a guy that would be okay playing on that franchise deal? So many guys now don't really want that. Does it feel like he'd be up for one more run at it and then see how things go beyond that?
I have an answer for you. It is 21 freaking million dollars, bro. Think about that. I mean, look, say what you want. We've watched this. This is Jesse Bates part two, right? Maybe he doesn't take part in the offseason program. Maybe he sits out half a training camp again. Maybe he shows up the exact same day in August that Jesse Bates did, and Jesse Bates has a great year and then gets the bank and a Pro Bowl is somewhere else. Maybe that's what happened, but we've seen this show and it seems to be going down that path again, unless T says, you know what, I don't want to take that risk that Jesse took, and I'll go ahead and sign whatever the best offer the Bengals come up with right before the tag deadline, which is March 5th, I believe, this year to watch on that. So anyway, I think to me, I think we have a lot of clarity on that right now, that I expect T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, and Joe Burrow and run it back next year, whatever those contracts look like. Burrow on a $29 million cap number next year. His extension doesn't hit until 25. You're still playing out that this is now the fifth year option. And so 29, I'm not great at math, but plus 21, 50 million. You're kind of paying for T and Burrow this year what you could have paid for Burrow. When he talked about yesterday, we had these what levers, whatever he called it, in place if needed. That is okay, push Burrow back, don't start the extension until 25, play the $29 million cap number. So 29 plus a T tag equals about what you could have paid Burrow in 2024. Again, that's a very rough, there's obviously millions of nuances and figures and math involved in there, but on a broad spectrum, you can kind of look at it that way. $50 million for that. And kind of when Burrow talks about ways he could structure things, that's part of that. And him being here through 2029, part of that. Okay. Ja'Marr Chase coming down the pike, but that can be a decision for another day. Justin Jefferson played it out. I think there's an expectation that Ja'Marr Chase probably ends up going the same way that Justin Jefferson did. And we're not talking about his extension until 2025 and things like that. So I feel like you're seeing a lot of this path start to play itself out. It still has to, but I think we got a really good view on where the Bengals stand on this whole thing now. That's the T snapshot. You want to spin the wheel again?
I don't want to make the sound.
All right, here comes the bad sound.
Good. That's strong.
And it lands on Joe Mixon. I'm counting him in the big six, even though he's under contract for next year. But he's under contract as an $8.5 million cap number. The Bengals would save 5.8 mil. If they let him go, they would take on 2.8 in dead money, which is more of a manageable figure than last year's was. 8.5 on the cap for Joe Mixon. That's a big number. They need more explosion in their running game. Everybody knows it. They've been obvious about that. Joe Mixon was, for all his touches this year, his yards over expectation via next gen, six. That's just a guy, right? That's who he is. And that's fine. Like that's who he is. And even if he's back next year, I think you're seeing him in more of a 50-50 role with Chase Brown and whatever else shows up in that room. And they still need a third down back. So there's a lot to be said there. But I just don't know how you're going to dedicate that type of a figure to somebody who was fine, And now there's a lot at play there. I mean, there's a reason he's still even he was here this year. There's a reason that they left it open for him to come back. And there's probably people in that building that are going to point to his overall numbers that aren't looking at it as intricately as we talk about explosive runs and missed tackles forced and some of the other stuff, the things that better fit maybe where their offense needs to go. I think there's going to be the same discussions. We're right back where we started, except this year there's something different, Dave. That's great for all of us. God bless it. great for all of us. And that is, there is a roster bonus trigger in Joe Mixon's 2024 on the fourth day of the league year. So we don't have to do this through the entire offseason. As much as I'd love to continue to litigate the Joe Mixon decision through all of the summer months, we will not have to do that this year, because you make your decision by that point. You're either, he's here, you there's the roster bonus, you want him on your roster, or you move on. And you know, that's something that Mixon's camp, I'm sure, had interest in not dragging out, and the Bengals, I'm sure, had interest in not dragging out. So we will know early. But you know, I think what they should do is obvious, but with most things that have involved Joe Mixon here, it is not that easy. It is complicated. And so where that falls, I think, tough to say right now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right. Let's take this minute here, because we want to bring in Mo Egger, my friend and yours, from ESPN 1530. Mo, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm well. I was just reading a tweet here from Pittsburgh where they're encouraging people to not order chicken wings this weekend because they're playing the Bills.
Yeah, that'll show them.
That'll show them.
Yep, way to go. Love it. So right now, what I'm kind of doing is we're kind of just ticking through the offseason a little bit, and currently in the first stage of potential free agents, discuss T. Higgins and Joe Mixon. Amongst sort of the big six of potential players that could move on with I think the writing on the wall with what happened yesterday, that T. Higgins is at the very, very least going to get a franchise tag with the expectation of him being back next year. Because I believe everything Joe Burrow tells me. But as we go through, what I want to pose to you generally, beyond free agents, in-house free agents, people they could go out and get, draft approach, anything over the course of this offseason that is in front of the Bengals right now, what is one move you want them to do? One, and let's call it an aggressive move, whatever that is, investing in your own, investing in picks, in getting heavy in free agency at a spot, addressing a position that maybe they have. What one aggressive move that you would like to see this team do over the course of the offseason?
So I've been so fixated on what's going to happen at right tackle.
Yeah.
That's where my mind goes first. But like, what's aggressive there? It's figuring out mathematically how to get Jonah Williams here long-term. It's not go find a player who's more expensive. It's is aggressive. Take a guy with the 18th pick and start him at right tackle week one. But I think that's the most interesting area of the team. And then if yesterday was, you know, a clear sign that T. Higgins is going to be back with the Bengals next year, likely under a franchise tag. Okay. That's out the window for Jonah. So what are you going to do there?
Yeah.
You're going to trust one of these dudes that's already on the team right now that didn't play this season? Like, what are you doing at this position where for years all I've heard is got to protect Joe, got to keep Joe upright? Are you going to find a player who's better than Jonah Williams? At the same time, are you really going to make a case that you should pay Jonah Williams high-end money to be right tackle? So I guess the first thing that I would wonder is, like, what does aggressive there look like? Within the parameters of what's most realistic, what does that look like? I would like to see a difference maker acquired on defense.
Yep.
A difference maker. Yep. Now, Trey Hendrickson's a difference maker. He's right now the only one. So arguably the best two free agency signings the Bengals maybe have ever made. Trey Hendrickson, DJ Reader. Who's the next version of DJ Reader? How do you acquire him? What does it cost? And if you don't acquire him, how's the defense going to be markedly better next year? So aggressive isn't now. Look, the success of the defense next year mainly hinges on the younger guys getting better. After Dax Hill played over 1,000 snaps, is the light bulb going to come on? Is it going to stay on for Cam Taylor-Britt? Is it going to stay on all season for Jordan Battle and DJ Turner? Do the linebackers they invested in play better? Does Miles Murphy flash more this coming season? But like that defensive tackle spot, I think the frustrating thing, if you go back and sort of relitigate the offseason, is so many things that we thought were quite obvious that they needed to address, they didn't, and they came back to bite this team. They didn't have a dynamic tight end. The running game was stuck in the mud. These are things we talked about a year ago, and they popped up over the course of the season, but we talked about defensive tackle. So I want to know who the next version of DJ Reader is. Now, some are going to say, well, it could be DJ Reader, and that's possible, I guess. We sure he's going to be healthy week one? Right? I mean, no, dude suffered, unfortunately, a catastrophic injury. So that can't be the answer. I can't. You have a hard time convincing me that, well, we're just going to run it back and you know, these guys who have been here, they're going to move into larger roles and be better, and it's going to improve the pass rush and it's going to improve the run defense. However it looks, if we're talking about like a big, aggressive, bold move, if I had my way, it'd be do something bold up front on the defensive line, because the last time they did it, it worked.
Yes.
With DJ Reader.
That's to me where I start, is I say, okay, now this happened last year with Orlando Brown. Nobody saw Orlando Brown coming, including the Cincinnati Bengals. But they saw an opportunity to make a big splash at a position that they should always be investing in, and they did. And they found a way to make it work, and they ended up, unbelievably, with a line that started every single game at all five positions. And for all the frustration and lamenting about that group over the course of time here in Cincinnati, was the best season of offensive line play that we've seen here in a long time, and mm-hmm. and turned out that way. You have to be considering an Orlando Brown style splash at defensive tackle, either one, at three technique, at defensive tackle. And if that's the aggressive move, that's where I'm going. And honestly, like, I'm not afraid. I look at getting involved in a guy like Justin Matabike from Baltimore. Steal from your rival.
Yeah.
Right from the heart
yes.
of your AFC North rival. Who had an absolute breakout year. He's at 26 years old. You're not paying an older Chris Jones and worrying about, you know, paying more for aging years, even though he is ridiculous and you would love to steal from the Chiefs. And it's probably more of a pipe dream there. And who knows? I count out nothing after last year, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying that to me, if I'm looking at the most aggressive move, and he, you know, he may be out of their price range, and Brad Spielberger has him at $23 million per year for 4 years. And boy, that sounds like a lot of money, but you know what? Paying DJ Reader $13 million per year back in 2020 sounded like a lot of money too, for what they did. And it paid off big time. I'm with you. That's where I would start. If I'm making one big aggressive play, that's mm-hmm. what I would, that's, I think you could make an argument that would be worth it over spreading out, you know, a bunch of mid-tier guys. And I'm fine with that philosophy too. But if we're talking about aggressive play, there's a few out there. Matabike, Christian Wilkins, Leonard Williams. You name any of those guys, and obviously Chris Jones too, but there's four real dudes. And maybe none of them are available. Maybe they all get mm-hmm. franchise tagged. I don't know. But I'm interested in that. And then I would still use a draft pick on some sort of a defensive tackle in one of the first 2 days of that draft and just try to fill in the interior pass rush and get that thing right.
We just had nearly a decade of Geno Atkins playing at a possible Hall of Fame caliber level, and we just had DJ Reader play to a level that many of us considered him at times the second most important player on teams that won the division. So understanding that, I know we fall in love with talking about the offense and the way the game is played, you know, the top 10 teams in the NFL in offense this year, all in the playoffs. Look, offensively, if Joe Burrow plays 17 games, they're going to have a playoff caliber offense. Now, maybe it's different if you don't have T. You certainly have to figure out the run game. We have to stop talking about plug and play tight ends. Like, it's not an area of the team that I want to ignore, but everything revolves around Joe playing 17 games healthy next season. If he does that, okay. Is that defense going to be a championship caliber level unit without significantly addressing this major weakness up front on the D-line? The answer is not yes, in my opinion, at least. The answer is not yes. And so I want to be bold there. I want to find the next DJ Reader who they thought so much of that they overpaid. Now, they're probably no longer in a position where they could overpay. You know, back then, somebody had to make the money, so why not this dude from the Houston Texans? But again, for 2 years, many of us regarded him as perhaps the second most valuable player on this team. Who's that guy moving forward? Chances are it's not coming from within. It's not coming from the bargain bin. It's not coming from Saturday of the draft. It's coming by doing something bold and aggressive.
Yes. In a conversation that I sort of had in the building yesterday, was this line stood out to me. It was that the Bengals don't look like a lot of the teams they play. Especially in this division. And that's not to get into the like trench warfare conversation, but I mean, a lot of these teams, you watch the Bengals a lot of people probably saw this chart. I know I retweeted it and it circulated of the Bengals playing the toughest schedule in football last year, specifically the defenses they played as a whole were like almost off the chart better than anybody else saw consistently. The Bengals saw these ridiculous pass rushers over and over and over again, including all the premier guys, Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, TJ Watt, Miles Garrett. Every week was another dude where you're like, golly. And the Bengals have Trey Hendrickson, and that's great. They had Trey Hendrickson. You know what? These other teams had those guys and waves. And it feels like they need to look more like the teams they play, particularly on the defensive front. And it starts on that interior spot when you're talking about now extracting DJ Reader as he was known here.
Yeah, and the Hendrickson thing, this is no knock on him by any stretch because he's been marvelous since he got here. He had a great year this season. A great year. The defensive line is still a weakness.
Yeah, which is crazy.
So that's no knock on Trey by any stretch. He had a terrific season, statistically and just
– You need more. You need more than one guy.
It wasn't enough. Yeah. If that doesn't illustrate how much of a weakness they have developed up front, I don't know what to tell you. And, you know, again, I think everybody who cares about the Bengals or covers the Bengals or watches the Bengals, they understand, like, all right, yeah, they got to get better up front. But for all the conversations we're going to have about Jonah, about tight end, about Mixon, about T, about the wide receiver position, about Jake Browning, about the secondary, item number one for me is if I'm going overboard to fix something, it's that.
Yes.
Because I don't think you're winning a Super Bowl next season, which is the goal. I don't think you're winning the Super Bowl next season unless you get that fixed with somebody who can make a difference.
Yeah, and you know what? If you go over the top and it ends up being a three technique, let's just use Madubuike, for example, since I referenced him earlier. You know, okay, well, maybe you could save $7.5 million on the cap with letting go of BJ Hill. And you're upgrading there, and you can backfill with the draft and another couple of pieces or a lower level guy, or maybe you're even bringing BJ Hill back at a lower number or whatever. Like, you know, the thing is, like, there's ways to then put yourself over the top in certain conversations if you're trying to be over aggressive and if you really want to have more. And I'm not saying that they would even need to do that or how what that would look like. But again, you can start to think outside of the box a little bit more at that spot. Is there something that you think people are talking too much about that you would push down the priority list? Or is it like, it's hard to do and it won't be long until I'll have the mock offseason chart out to keep everybody in check that says just pay everybody all the monies and realize that you have to take away from one slice for the other. But is there something that as you think more about it, you push a little further down the priority list in your mind?
Well, it's not something that gets moved down the priority list. It's almost a non-starter for me. And the conversations have quieted since they lost a couple of games. But the what to do with Jake Browning thing for me is quite simple.
Yeah,
he's the backup quarterback.
He's great.
And
great backup quarterback.
Great. Awesome. Confidence. By the way, I believe what he said on Sunday where he goes, I think I'm one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the NFL. I believe that.
Yeah.
Now, he might be 30.
It might be 31, yeah.
Yeah, but...
But hey, that's something.
So next year at the most important position, I have two of the best 32 guys. Yes. Like, I feel like when he was peaking, you know, the three game stretch where he played so well and made magic against Minnesota. Now we got to overthink this. Let's not overthink this. Make the offer, whatever that looks like. Right. He's the backup quarterback. I have a hard time believing somebody's going to overwhelm them with a huge haul of picks for Jake Browning. I value depth at the most important position in all of sports. This is a non-starter. It's a non-topic for me.
He is a winning team's backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay. Like in a position where they might have the most solid quarterback room in the league when you take the combination of an elite starter and amongst backups, one of the most comfortable backup situations in the entire league. Because what do you want? A guy that can go out and win games for a month. And guess what? He proved he can get you to 500 or better over the course of a month. They know ways to win with him.
Who might still be ascending, right?
Yes, like, absolutely. Absolutely.
Your typical backup quarterback is either somebody who's coming down the ladder who used to be good, right? Who used to be a starter and now nobody really views him that way. Primary example right now is Andy Dalton. Guy who was terrific, won a lot of games, but you know, he's coming down the ladder.
Know what you got.
Or a dude who's just biding his time until he's the starting quarterback. And there's less and less of that around the league because these guys start almost instantly. But right there in the middle, you have a guy who gained valuable experience, played well, is still ascending, and costs nothing.
Yeah.
And knows your stuff. Will be in your system now next year for a fourth year. Like, are you kidding me?
Yes.
So that talk has quieted. But when we start to, okay, what has to get done? The easiest one, the easiest decision they have is, Jake, here's the deal. Want to play in the NFL next year? Sign it. Awesome. See you at OTAs.
Yep. No question. And it's maybe – you know, it's one of the best developments to come out of this entire season was that they are solidified and solid at the most important position in sports, assuming that health and recovery from Burrow continues and then you have Browning behind him and you feel really good there. In a year that everybody said, the year of the backup quarterback, right? Everyone's going to value people. They're going to get drafted higher. They're going to get paid more. And to be able to sit there and say, you have $30 million in cap to have the best quarterback room that you could possibly have probably in terms of starter and backup is just a great place to be in and doesn't need to be touched. And you can focus on everything else right now. And that's a great thing. I got to ask, there's two things I had, we get these listeners that have been sending in their funny growler bets and things like that. And we had a thing called the Dave Allen compromise that happened a few weeks ago where a number of people all guessed 69 because my listenership is predictable and it ended up being the answer. And turns out somebody who didn't exactly get it right, but had 69.69 for an answer and another answer ended up getting, his name was Dave Allen. He sort of sent an email to me and was pointing out, his apologies to those that were part of that and didn't get to win the free beer, and he'd love to share it with them. And at the end, he mentioned that Mo has built a cat condominium for one of if you build a cat condominium,
a what?
I was very confused by this.
Okay.
And I wanted to just bring it up with you. He says, Mo built a cat condo for a neighborhood feline. And unless he's confused or I'm confused, I was really hoping it was you. And in your side job, you're one of your side hustles is you build condos for cats.
I would love to take credit for this. I have no remote idea what this person is talking about.
Okay, good. I'm happy. I'm happy about that now.
I'm interested in seeing a photo of the cat condo.
Yeah.
I want to know what that looks like.
Yes.
As a former owner of cats, don't they kind of just build their own? Right? They
or
just go wherever.
The moment you build them something, they want nothing to do with it.
Correct.
Except to stare at it and then stare at you sarcastically, like, nice.
My first wife had two cats, which became my cats. And then when the marriage ended, they ceased being my cats. One day, I got a pair of dress shoes. And the box became the one cat's, like, go-to. And he had the box, like, we couldn't get rid of it. Like, well, every day I'd come home, he'd be laying in this shoebox. Well, that's all a cat needs. Doesn't need a cat condo. So cats just sort of find a place they like, and we're good. So, no, I've not built any cat condos. That's not something that I've done, but I'm curious as to what this look like. Is that the kind of thing you farm out to somebody?
It's hard to know. Yeah. I like to think that there's a whole industry. I mean, I guarantee you, if people are listening to this and Google cat condo right now, I bet you they find something and they're on Amazon and they might buy one. I think it's built. Well, I like the idea. Build your own, you know, go on Etsy, right? And someone's yep. building you their own unique customized cat condo just for your house and cat. I like it.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine myself like in the wood shop, banging away and coming to this guy's house with his cat condo. So no, that was not me, but I hope the cats are enjoying the condo, whoever built.
Okay. Let's more important news. Let's yes. be on cat condos. The Miami Mall aliens, Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did you read up? Did you catch up on the story? So
I did.
At a mall in Miami, about a million police show up to the Miami Mall. Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to know what it is, but in some very grainy video from atop a sky rise, it looked like there might have been a shadowy, very tall alien creature. And some people, none of which I've seen directly report, you know, quoted anywhere, were claiming to have said they saw aliens. And that is why all these police arrived. And we are all having the wool pulled over our eyes. The police claim that it was crowd control due to juveniles refusing to leave and setting off fireworks in the area that made them think there was a shooting going on. What happened? Are you believing that the Miami police force is trying to hide this from us? Did you see the alien creature? Are you a believer? Which side of the fence are you on in the Miami Mall alien fiasco?
Okay. If the aliens were at the mall, first of all, you're in Miami, and the first place you're going to go is a mall.
They don't know better. Right? They're trying to learn about American culture, Mo.
Secondly, how did they get there, and did nobody see them en route? Like, I don't know if extraterrestrials exist. I don't know. What I do know is, well, what I could say pretty emphatically is, if aliens do arrive, as soon as they do, we're going to notice them, right?
I feel like we would notice them.
We're going to notice their entry into the atmosphere. We're going to notice their craft landing. We're going to see them. They're not going to be given free rein like fugitives to just show up at a place and suddenly we see them. So these aliens just arrived at a mall. Nobody saw them get there. Nobody saw them arrive in Miami. Nobody saw them park their craft. Nobody saw them in the parking lot or using public transportation. They just showed up at a mall.
This I love the idea of an alien riding the subway and no one talking about it on the route to the mall to go to, you know.
Right. Also,
Aeropostale.
Also, the people on the internet say, hey, there's aliens. Have we heard from anybody who was there at the mall with the aliens?
Not as of yet.
Right. So I would think like the direct up close eyewitness would be the first person you would want to talk to. And I haven't heard from any of them. So I am skeptical about this story from Miami.
I think skeptical is the proper word. As much as I want to really embrace the grainy 12th floor video of some sort of tall, shadowy person, I want it to be true. I want this. I want to see these guys. I want to say hi. I want to know how they got there. I want to know if they drove in a Ford Taurus, but like how, like I want to know, but granted, as much run as this got, I think it's not as valid as the little creepy guy from the Mexican or Peruvian Congress.
Yeah.
I'm more on board with that than I am this.
This has nothing to do with aliens, but I think if there is an award for people who were irrationally calm in the face of impending doom, the people on that Alaska Airlines airplane where the panel blew off and the video, people are just sitting there hanging out.
All right. And, guess the door's gone.
Watching their streaming.
Does this stop our in-flight movie? I'm trying to watch Blackberry.
I cannot imagine. I mean, I cannot imagine if I'm on the fort, we can laugh about it because fortunately everybody's okay.
Yes.
I cannot imagine you're on an airplane and a panel blows off and I just start looking for the beverage cart. Oh yeah. You think I can get up and go to the bathroom? Like what? You talk about the most calm individuals ever. Every video, every still photo I've seen of this, people are just kind of going about their business. Incredible.
Incredible.
Because I would be losing my damn mind.
Yeah, you're not. I'm not enhancing my calm if that happens. There's no way I'm doing anything other than just running, even just up and down the aisle for no reason. Yeah,
you're correct.
By the way, what I do love about this is, have you ever, when you booked a flight, ever looked at the actual name of the aircraft that you're selecting? Have you before this?
Not anymore. Well, not to this point, but now.
Yeah. Every single time I ever book an aircraft from this point forward, like, that's not one of the Max 9s, is it? I don't want to get on. If that says it's a 737 Max 9, not happen anymore. And then they're just finding more evidence of all these other Max 9s just have like loose bolts and stuff. And when they found that out on some of them, they decided, we're not going to stop using them. We're just not going to fly it over the ocean. We're just going to keep it over land. So when the door flies off, we can just go land it quickly. That can't be the decision.
I mean, here's a quote from the story. His shirt got sucked off his body when the panel blew out because of the pressure. And yet, like there's a couple, they're like posing, they're doing selfies with their masks on.
Yeah.
The guy with no shirt on is just looking at his phone. These are the calmest individuals ever.
I love the idea of like the guy with no shirt on just sitting there still watching an episode of Friends.
Your shirt just got sucked off of you and you're like, yeah. Finish up this episode of Modern Family and watch.
Yeah, thank you.
What are we doing? Incredible.
Thank you for bringing this up. I'm glad we touched on it. All right. That was a good aside from all the deep intensity of the offseason. But we have plenty more offseason that we'll get into today in the 3 o'clock hour on ESPN 1530. We get to do our first offseason episode at Moorline Lagerhouse one last time.
No, we're in studio.
Here we go. It was a good run at the Logger House, but we return to the studio. I love it. Very excited about that.
Back in Kenwood. So we look forward to seeing you.
All right. Talk to you then, Mo.
All right. See you guys.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Mo Egger, ESPN 1530, joining us. And I'm glad, you know, Dave, you see we have a shared rundown here that we go through on the podcast every week. And I have a lot on this one. And I didn't have the Alaska airline door. And thank goodness Mo showed up to bring that in, because that has been on my mind and something that has needed to be discussed, and far more important than a lot of these, the big six wheel and positional priority I'm about to get into.
Well, I would say I wouldn't look at the plane and decide not to get on it, but I do like that exit row for the leg room. And now I don't think I want the exit row. I think I'll take the cramping at this point. Now, what I do want is, if this happens on a flight I'm on, whoever has stolen my overhead space by getting on the plane way too early before they're supposed to, I want their overhead stuff sucked out that door. That would be the silver lining. Those jerks that get up when it's, you know, the Diamond Club members, and you know they're in row 52, and they just get up and get on and take my overhead space. If their bag goes out that door, I think it's all worth it.
Excuse me, sir, are you emerald or platinum?
Have they ever turned anyone away, though?
No.
They'll let anyone in.
Little secret to listeners of Hear That Podcast Growling, and this is known as the morning gym move. Jim Ozarski was notorious for doing this in the morning. Is just, no matter where, what group you're in, they just don't check. They just want you to get on. He would just go ahead and just walk on whenever he felt like going on, work his way up there. Shout out, Jim.
I'm shaking with rage right now.
It was only Jim. He only did it in the morning because he wasn't a morning guy.
All right.
On that note, let's get back to our chronological dissection here. Now, we just got into a little bit. I want to go through the rest of this Big Six. And Mo and I touched on positional priorities, but I want to kind of run down the positional priorities after that, beyond defensive tackle, which I think is a clear number one and two. But back to DJ Reader, we mentioned earlier. He's amongst this group. Spent a long time talking to him yesterday, and I just really, you know, everybody that's heard him on this podcast, whether it's through interviews we've done or read stories that we've written about him, know how respected he is and how much of an absolute pro he is. I find his market fascinating. I don't think anybody, and he admitted yesterday, himself included, has any damn clue what's going to happen or what he wants. Or he knows he's got to rehab. He's he's got a really great attitude about it. He's planning on coming back and kicking ass. He says he would absolutely love to come back to Cincinnati if that was possible, but he doesn't know what it's going to look like. He doesn't know if teams are going to be uninterested in him because of his injury in March, if he'll have to wait till later, if he needs to take a 1 year prove it, if he needs to just try to take multi-year wherever he could get, how are teams going to respond to this? Is he going to have to wait to pass a physical? He's like, you know, hard to know, man. He's going to go forward and try to get better every day and let everybody in that building know that he'd love to be here if there's a way to make it work. The injury and the concept of a 1 year prove it of DJ Reader, I think, does make him an interesting potential return. Whereas I didn't think there was much of a chance of him coming back before this, because I just thought his market was going to be way too high. I know Brad Spielberger, before the injury was really known seriously, had him at a really big deal. I mean, 3-4 years, 50-60 million, and he would deserve that. Now it's much different. What does that look like? Can that pigeonhole in even as a potential like PUP, post PUP return, even if that were the case? I'm not saying that would be the case, but if you knew you could get 1 year of 11 games of DJ Reader giving you some semblance of what he gave you last year, how much is that worth? And that number might be higher than you think when you consider everything that we just talked about with the defensive tackle position. It's a wild card, but it's a factor that could pay off for you huge in the long run if he got all the way back and could be there and be that guy for one more year.
I just think it's a big if, and he's
it missed, is huge.
He's missed a lot of time over time too. It's not like this has been his only injury. I mean, there's no denying the dude's a game wrecker and a guy, when healthy, any team would want. But, you know, I think what you're laying out is probably ideal for the Bengals if they could get it at kind of this prove it rate. And then you kind of get the best of him too, because he's in an audition the rest of the time. So probably not an ideal scenario for him, but I think you're right. If he had gotten out of this season totally healthy, he's probably not really even an option for him, is he?
No, I don't think he would price himself out, and they wouldn't want to go in with a guy that far defensive tackles into their 30s. I sort of outlined this last year, but you know, when we were talking about extension candidates, I think they would have been interested in adding one more year. They would be interested in paying him for his year 30, age 30 season, and think that he's got maybe one more in him. But getting beyond that gets too risky as you get older with bigger guys like that that do have an injury history. And unfortunately, a guy 3 games away didn't get there. I'm going to bring you some Q&A type stuff with Reader and my next topic here, Jonah Williams. In the coming days, you can read more about the things that they've had to say and some of their perspective from the conversations I had with them. So let's talk about Jonah Williams. Jonah did and said all the right things this year. He came in, he embraced the move to right tackle, he embraced his teammates, he embraced showing off versatility. He played at a fine level. He's good and okay, and a starting left or right tackle in this league, starting level. He's not elite. He's not terrible. He's starter. And that's valuable in this league where there's not a lot you can say that about. He created value for himself. He's a good dude. People like him. He's made of all the right stuff. He's been healthy now for 3 straight years. Jonah Williams is a solid player. He sort of said yesterday something that I thought was interesting when people were asking him if he was – Charlie Goldsmith brought this up to him. You know, you had issues, obviously, with people that moved you and signed Orlando Brown, and communication was a problem, and that was very – you were vocal about that. Is that – you know, was that mended? And his point was, well, I chose to focus on so many people that I am tight with here, you know, whether it's the staff, the clubhouse staff, the equipment guys, my teammates, my coaches that I like. And that was his point. Like, he didn't say, yeah, we're good, dog. be in the front office out hugs and hand pounds, baby. No, it was, I chose to focus on the people that I want to play for and to do the right thing by them and by me and my career and not worry about that. AKA, it's been fun.
Yeah.
And I think from his perspective, hitting the open market, he's created the most value he can. He will have more value elsewhere where a team might want him for left or right, and he can create that. He has value, more value elsewhere than he does here. We know what his relationship has been like with the front office. He kept saying, I'm small picture stuff. I'm not here to think about the big picture of that right now. He didn't want to dive into that specifically and wasn't. To me, all of that, alongside this other factor, we know what the Bengals want at offensive linemen now. They want these big sons of guns, okay? They want the big guys. They want Orlando Browns, right? The giant-ass Cordell Volsons. They want these big anchors that can pass pro. Jonah is not that. He's a better fit for a more athletic group that's trying to run more wide zone and do more of that outside stuff and move more. They don't want that. Now, people are maybe saying they should want that more. They need to be more athletic. And that's a conversation you can have. They don't want that. They want big people movers that theoretically could actually move people. But that's neither here nor there. Those two things combined, I think, make it generally clear, and what his number will be, and the fact that they're going to tag T, that this is over. Yeah. That Jonah Williams is not going to be high on their priority list, and that his next move won't be back to Cincinnati.
Yeah. So then that raises the question, if that's the case, do you have to fill that position through the draft? Or do you think they go cheaper and find a different guy? Because I don't think it's that easy to just go find the different guy cheaper, because if the different guy's any good, he's going to be making a bunch of money. So does that become just a massive, massive draft need? And will they hit on it? I mean, they've struggled some with picking an offensive line.
There's an understatement of the century. Yeah. They've struggled some picking offensive linemen. Again, I sort of tweeted about this, and I think I talked about it on the walkout, but you look back at the 21 draft and the Carmen whiff specifically, and Deontay Smith or Trey Hill giving you anything, but the Carmen whiff and what that would have saved you over the last couple of years is just astronomical. I don't know why he's still here. I don't know what people think they're waiting for.
Yeah.
I guess he's going to be hanging around whatever, but I think we're back where we were last year when we talked about them potentially trading Jonah, or before the Orlando Brown signing, of what they were going to do at right tackle. And that was a combination plate, right? I'm a big Mexican restaurant guy. I don't want to sit down and have one giant quesadilla, Dave. Okay. No. I want a nice combination plate. Give me a couple bit of quesadilla, maybe a soft taco and the double rice, maybe some beans. I want a combination plate. I want to feel like whatever, however my meal goes, I'm going to be all right. And I've got backup plans. If it shows up and I'm like, I like the look of that chicken, I want to know that I got some beans that can fill me up. Okay.
Sure.
The Bengals need a combination plate move. This is what we talked about last year. That was for them. I think there is a mid-level right tackle that you can find in free agency. Pick your puppy. Okay. That you can attack and find whoever that is. Maybe you're approaching it from an Alex Kappa perspective and you're aggressive on day one. You pinpoint your mid-level guy and you go get him. Or Karis in that same conversation like they did there. One guy, that's the guy. Let's go after him. Come block for Joe Burrow and win a title. Give him 2 to 3 years at $20 million and make him your right tackle. Or you find – or a smaller version of that with a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe a little less, and – but you are supplementing that with maybe it is the 18th overall pick. Maybe it is. Maybe it's the second round pick. And at a certain point, they do stink at drafting offensive linemen. There's no question about that. But at a certain point, you have to believe that you can get it right. Yeah. I feel like they know what they're looking for. And you can then not have the pressure on that guy to be great immediately. And maybe he is, and maybe he supplants mid-tier guy. But set your basement, set your foundation at a serviceable level at right tackle, and draft for depth immediately and a long-term starter. Maybe it's a guy who's a tackle guard combo. Maybe it's whatever. But again, I feel like we've been talking about this. What Jackson Carman was supposed to be, okay? That should be the approach there. That would make the most sense and that you could see them doing. But I think the approach that we won't see is a return of Jonah Williams and an investment in that. Tyler Boyd, it appears, is gone. Now, I wrote about him, and you know, Charlie Clifford from Channel 5 had a great observation yesterday of Jamar Chase leaving with one thing in hand, and it was a Tyler Boyd jersey with a message written in it. Yeah. And you could tell that talking to TB. We knew that. We've talked about how they need a succession plan there. And I'll be curious what his market is. I think you could see him. I think he's in the 7 to 10 range for 2 years for somebody, you know,
yeah.
2 years, 16, 3 years, 20 some. I think someone's willing to go there with TB, who's been a very, very good slot receiver in a league that values them and brings the right stuff to a building. I think someone could go there. I don't think the Bengals are certainly going to be willing to go there. The interesting part about that for me, and that I want to get into, is and Chidobe Awuzie as well, I think you see move on somewhere else. I think he's a starter in this league. I think he gets I think someone will sign him to be a starter or a CB3 in a competition. And that's more than I think he'll feel like he'll get here, knowing how they feel about DJ Turner and Cam Taylor-Britt.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. Again, free agency's wild. I didn't think Jermaine Pratt would come back either. And he did. So things happen. But for that fact, that does feel like he's gone. So a big drop off. T, Mixon, Reader, all feel in the potentially back. Awuzie, Jonah, Boyd, all feel like the definitely gones as we draw the line there. And where how it looks right now as we sit here today. But on the slot conversation, so positional priority for me when I'm looking at that throughout this offseason, positional priority one, positional priority two, defensive tackle, three tech, big guy, combination of the two, somehow, probably one draft, one free agency, something there. Some new blood, mix it in with BJ Hill and, you know, whatever else you got there and create waves, create depth, be more dynamic on the interior. Next priority is wide receiver two, which is accomplished by tagging T. Higgins, which it appears what they're going to do, or long-term deal, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Next for me now, right tackle. How are you going to handle that? But slot receiver.
Yeah.
They drafted Charlie Jones. I don't know that they got what they wanted out of Charlie Jones this year. Yeah. Now there's some extenuating circumstances. He didn't get a ton of snaps. He was hampered by injury. But he wasn't quite, I think, what they thought he would be instinctually in the slot. He played a lot of outside in college. He's got speed. But I don't think they felt like he's also small. You come from TB, who is a physical, tough dude in there. And you got to be. And Burrow likes that. Don't forget that. What fits the quarterback? You know, guys that have awareness, that know how to get themselves open. Tanner Hudson made a living for himself here off having those traits that Burrow really values. Guys who Burrow will put it on you if he knows exactly where you're going to be the same place every time. When you're not, you're Irv Smith or you're Mike Thomas, the receiver. Okay, it's over. Like, you got to prove that. And Charlie Jones hasn't had those reps. He'll have an opportunity, but that could be a sneaky position for them to be aggressive at. Maybe that's their receiver draft pick. Think, yeah. You know, if you could get this year's Tank Dell in round three and have that be part of your answer. And you have Andre Yoshivash coming back. He's not a slot guy, but you can do things. I mean, Jamar could play the slot every day.
Yeah.
You want him to, but he moves everywhere.
Yeah. And you don't want him to be your regular slot, but he's got that ability. I think, you know, Tank Dell's a good point. You're seeing teams finding some really nice receivers later in the draft.
And you can find a slot guy later because that will be the knock on them. Right. Doesn't play outside or is missing something that you look for an outside guy, but could be a great immediate slot. That's why Tyler Boyd went where he went, which was at the end of the second round, because he was kind of viewed as just a slot guy. Well, that if that's what you need, you can wait a little longer and find a real impact player.
But conversely, that was Charlie Jones. So there's the chance you get the guy that maybe isn't fitting. I do think he's kind of a work in progress because he played all year with that labrum injury. It's just hard to know. I think it would have been nice to see more of him this year, especially kind of, you know, we had such a weird season where it looked like the wheels came off and then they came back on and they came back off again. Yeah. So it's hard to evaluate what they've got in him, but you're right in the sense that he's different than Boyd. And it's a pretty big gamble if you're just going to go into the next season and say, well, he's your guy. I don't think he's done anything. You can just say he's our guy, whether you go get somebody else or draft somebody else, or I don't know if Trenton Irwin can be moved. I don't know what his situation is, but you're definitely right that that's kind of a sneaky problem that's out there that maybe isn't as glaring as the rest.
Well, I mean, we know, again, the same part of the T. Higgins conversation. This is what makes this team go, like, the receivers. And it's a little easier when you have T. and Jamar to not need to have a great slot. But, you know, they still, that's part of who they are. And so finding somebody there, and that could be a free agent. I mean, again, the slot receiver conversation could be similar to the tight end conversation with free agency, where you can find a guy who's going to come here for less, who's talented because they're like, give me a 1 year, prove it playing with Burrow and then I'll cash in. So you could find that. And also, this is a year of a very deep wide receiver draft. The last time we saw that was 2020. And you've seen some of these classes where the receivers, there's been a couple of receiver classes that have forced the free agent market down, where teams are not willing to pay the receivers, and all of a sudden you've got a bunch of dudes you expected to get multi-year big deals taking 1 year prove-its for less because everybody's banking on getting somebody in the draft. Well, that looks like this type of a draft for receiver, which could be just as good as any that we've ever seen, particularly at the top. So maybe that's how it happens. Maybe you find a value free agent there that you're getting for far less than a Tyler Boyd, and that's younger, that maybe gives you a little more speed or juice, but has all the things on tape that you want to see and is willing to come here and try to connect with Burrow to build him up. And you draft somebody again or wait for more development on Charlie Jones, whatever that is, and try to find a way to build it that way. But a sneaky high priority for me is getting that figured out, and I think it's a tricky one that to keep an eye on as they go forward. After that, I kind of have safety as a wild card, you know, of could they, won't they? Talked about that a little bit last week with Trags. Hard to say. If there's at a certain point, you probably have to hope that Dax Hill's it, but you certainly could see them saying, I don't think he's it, and having to find other answers. But I don't know, with everything that we just talked about and all the priorities we just did, how you're finding money to a place to throw money at safety. You know, it's or draft capital. And so you kind of have to turn to Lou Anarumo, Robert Livingston, and those guys and say, get it right. You are physically gifted, Dax Hill. Jordan Battle, you are on the come here. You can be a guy. You guys got to figure it out, okay? Get in the lab, work it. I don't care if they're the only position group that has to actually fully participate in the offseason program because they earned that.
Yeah.
But they need to be there, and they need to get it figured out, and they need to be confident next year and say that that's the answer, because paying for it or spending high draft picks on it doesn't feel real plausible without some serious creativity.
Yeah. Well, you just, especially with Dax Hill, you can't have a first rounder just look like they're not the answer this quickly. And, you know, so far he looks like he might not be the answer, but as much as you're going to have to take your lumps with that, and one would hope Anarumo, one would hope Anarumo could also scheme something to maybe cut down on the explosives. But if you're running the same dudes out there, the dudes have to be better.
If we learned anything this year, Dave, it's that you can't scheme out explosives. Is that you can do whatever you want. If the guys can't do it, it doesn't matter. And so they've got to find a way to build those guys back up. And that has to be an approach. But, and maybe there's, again, I say wild card. There's a, you never know. Maybe something falls in their lap that way, with a veteran safety who can come in and compete or be a third guy, or maybe they feel like they see a jump from Tyson Anderson, who was a really good special teams player. I don't know. But it's something that's certainly on the mind. After that, tight end, running back, we're right back here again with that same conversation that needs to get worked out. Third down running back, what happens with Mixon? All of that kind of blends together. They don't, if there was a tight end meeting tomorrow, it would be James Casey in a room talking to himself. Everybody's a free agent. And so they've got a Drew Sample proved his value. He might have created a market for himself. They're going to try to get him back, obviously. Tanner Hudson, I would assume they're going to want to get him back. Neither one of those guys are going to need to break the bank, but they're still going to need to be paid. And then there's, you know, they, it's not that they didn't want a tight end last year in the draft, and it was that none of the guys they liked lined up for them properly in their mind. And we'll relitigate Laporta and Murphy in the years to come, but they had the premier edge rusher over the tight end they liked. It was close, but they had Miles Murphy ahead of him. So be it. And they weren't necessarily sold on some of the other guys that were available in round two or in round three for any number of reasons. And so they go back down that road again. I think they're open to it. I don't think it's a thing where they're saying, we're not going to take a tight end. It's that it has to line up. And you've just heard us peck down these needs here. It's hard to see that lining up at the top of the draft. Does Brock Bowers slip to 18, and does that even matter? I don't know, man. Like, it's hard to say that. And, you know, we've seen a lot of these, more cases again of second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth tight end selected end up having make a bigger impact than the top couple. It's just kind of a way that we've seen that position go. So, and running back, again, they're open to it and they know they need to address it. And I think it will be in some capacity with whatever happens with the Mixon decision setting that off, whether it's free agency. Man, I look at a guy like Zach Moss.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there you go. Younger. Yeah. Not hasn't had as much work, showed he can carry it. He's can catch it. He hits all your advanced analytics numbers of yards over expectation and explosives. And he's a free agent. I look at somebody like that and say, there's a, you know, that's a nice swap.
Yeah. An example I use from last year is DeAndre Swift. It's like Detroit didn't seem to have much use for him. Philadelphia gets him. He looks pretty good. And they got him at a fraction of the price of what Miles Sanders went off and got paid. So there's dudes out there. That is definitely a position that there's dudes out there that you can get at a value. And Moss is a good example of it.
And of course, I'll say it again. I believe this for a long time. Clyde Edwards-Helaire will be here. He's best friends with Joe Burrow. Yeah. They had the perfect combination at LSU. Like, he loved the reliance on him there. He was a first-round pick for a reason and got lost in the wash in Kansas City. Change of scenery candidate and somebody they can pluck from the Chiefs. They love doing that. They love the idea of that. I look at him as CEH as a clearly a potential Samaje Perine that they could bring in and see how that goes. And I don't know totally how they feel about that. I mean, maybe they'd rather go another direction. Maybe if Jerick McKinnon shakes free or somebody else or whatever. But again, I still think now with Hilaire being an actual free agent and not somebody who's going to be the most sought after guy out there would seem a natural in the back of that room. And they would certainly have more hope for him over Chris Evans, who has obviously been the decisions have been made on guys like him and really Trevion too.
Which in hindsight from a few weeks back, you asked which guy would go into the transfer portal. And after the fact, I realized, it's Chris Evans. That's a guy who should have gone into the transfer portal.
Yes. All right. So that kind of takes us through now free agency, the players available. There's your priorities. We kind of get a feel. We'll dive more into that as we get into the mock offseason exercise and get through, you know, some of the next month here. And we'll take a closer look at some of the candidates and directions they could go and all that's coming. But that's sort of the general landscape draft. They were going to be picking 18th. Recent history of sort of the 17, 18, 19 range, if you want to just get a feel. Last year, Christian Gonzalez, corner, Jack Campbell, linebacker to Detroit, Kalijah Kancey, who was a favorite of everybody, hoping that he would end up in the Bengals situation, went 19 last year. That's a type of player you could find in 2022. Guard Zion Johnson, Treylon Burks receiver, Trevor Penning, you know, some of that next level of offensive linemen, whether it's due to position of Zion Johnson being a guard or Penning not being one of the top tackles but still available there. 21, Alex Leatherwood, which was a bust. Jalen Phillips, who's been great for Miami. Jameen Davis, linebacker. 2020, CeeDee Lamb goes at 17. Now, that's interesting. I mentioned that because that was the last time we saw a draft at wide receiver that could look like this, where you got all these real dudes at receiver entering this draft. There were eight receivers taken in the top 34 that year, including T. Higgins. CeeDee Lamb went at 17. Justin Jefferson went at 21. Brandon Ayuk went at 25. Think about that.
And now, so what you're saying tempting. Is the Bengals will get a guy the equivalent of CeeDee Lamb. That's what Paul Daner's saying.
Justin, right now. Don't go sign Justin Jefferson from Minnesota. Just draft Justin Jefferson. I think 18 ends up a trench pick for all the reasons that we just talked about.
Yeah.
Right tackle, defensive tackle, those guys being hard to find and big needs. But just note that. As we talk about the year of the receiver, you didn't have Henry Ruggs, yikes, went at 12 that year, but the top receivers slid a little bit because there were so many and teams were willing to wait a little bit. And maybe this is that year, maybe it's not. I mean, these dudes are real guys, neighbors from LSU, and we saw Adunze last night for Washington. I mean, these guys are guys. So. Yeah. Maybe it's like the Chase Waddle draft where they get picked regardless. But keep that in mind. It's just something when you start talking about what happens in that spot when we start getting into draft talk, and we'll get into that. Mobile is right around the corner. We'll get into some snapshots of the draft class here for you too. But a lot of that dependent on what happens in free agency. It never used to be that way, Dave. We didn't have to talk about free agency. But now you do. And now you do. And now you even have to talk about some of the top guys because you never know. Because you never know. It could be a surprise move that happens. Bengals with $54 million in effective cap space. I mentioned this the other day, which is a decent amount of coin. But if you subtract 21 immediately off a fully guaranteed one-year tag, you know, now you're down to 33, and then you take off the 12 to 15 that they already do anyway, just because it's the way they operate. Now you got 20 million. And now you can't even afford Metta BK.
Yeah.
So perhaps there's your answer. But just saying, they've found ways around these things in the past, and perhaps they could do it again. All right. That's the draft, and then we're in OTAs and the offseason program, which maybe they'll take a little more seriously this year. Maybe they won't. A conversation for that point in time. Woo! These snapshots are hard. I do this episode every year, the first episode after the season ends. Now, granted, we kind of did it already a little bit last week, but this is the hardest episode all year because there's so much that you want to touch on, that you want to talk about, because it all affects everything. And this is what they're doing. This is their next month, is vacations and some of the coaches taking interviews. And what's the path forward, right? Let's deep dive on this. Let's analyze. What do you want to do? Who do you want to let go? What do they need? What did they miss? And this staff has been pretty good at that in recent years. But this is what's happening over the next month, is the expansion of all of these topics that we are kind of blowing through right now. And I say blowing through, we're an hour and a half in. So apologies to everyone that's hanging with us. But
it's like the Irishman of podcasts right now.
It is. But you know what? We're not going to be doing two podcasts a week going forward. We're shoving it in a one. So this is all, let's just get it all out there now. Put it all out there on the table, and then we'll divide it up as we go forward. All right. Thanks to everybody for hanging around with us. To recap, Growler Bet, the answer for yards from scrimmage for rookies was 151. Big day for Charlie Jones, Andre Yoshivash, who had two touchdown catches. Chase Brown had yardage. So a big number. Not many of you, I don't think maybe one or two of you, had more than 151. So big day for the rookies. No winners. Did have some submission. Of course, nobody had any media singing to me. No local media C-list celebrity montages. Nothing. So really, really disappointing effort from all of you after what we got from Brian Ramstetter and from Ray White the previous week. Maybe that was our high note, you know? It's like a good movie. There's the movie plot line where it's like up, down, up, all the way up. And then the spring caught climax, and it falls off at the end as the movie ends.
Maybe week 18 for the Growler Bet folks is like for the players, you know, you sit a lot of starters. It doesn't mean a lot. So, you know, they're just shutting down a little bit early. I'm going to give them a pass on this.
All right. That's fine. That's nice of you.
But they better start strong next year.
You know, that's a real stepdad thing to do, Dave, is to just, I'm not going to try to really play the parent role on this one. I'll leave that to you. All right. That's fine. I'm not here to motivate. These kids have already been raised.
What I do want is to start next year, I want like a We Are the World like song to you with all the Cincinnati media in it. So they each get a part. It'll go on for like 25 minutes.
Please, 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 please. How much I need this in my, maybe I might take it on myself to create it, honestly. And the more obscure Cincinnati celebrity, I use that in air quotes, the better. But shout out to Eric Sanjo, one of our favorites, core foundational Growler Bet member, with his subject header, the damn it, Ramstetter, can we reset some expectations for Growler submissions? Some of us have kids, Growler. It's true. Like, how do you live up to this? If you're one of these people that likes to submit and likes to drop a little, you know, drop a Wayne's World joke in, thinking it's great. Next thing you know, here's Jeremy Rowell singing poems. Right? It's tough. It's tough on everybody. Or, you know, see, this is a great submission from Matt Chaney. Yes, it's true. This man has no Growler Bet, which is great. You know, Little Ghostbusters, one that I love. It's playing to, you know, playing to your base. You know who you're sending it to. It's a great line from a great movie. It's Bill Murray. I love it. But it pales into comparison because the expectations that have been set.
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel Bayless, though, great, because I love it when you play off the previous week's episode, off one of the great Jamar quotes of all time. I gave you a little growler. Don't take all of it. Gave you a little spice.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. Easy there, buddy. I gave you a little
strong.
That was strong. Yeah, I appreciate Daniel for that. So I just want to say thank you guys for engaging and being part of this ridiculousness of the Growler bet and the submissions and everything else. It just makes it so fun. I hope you enjoy it. It seems that maybe you do. We're still in the works of plotting the next live event at 50 West, but of course, there's going to be beer flowing and it's going to be a great time. I always love seeing all of you guys in person when we do that. So keep an eye out for that going forward as we figure all of that out. On that note, Dave, do you have any playoff predictions?
Well,
on the record, do you have any gut feelings, any things that you want to put out there that you're
we did before the season, we had the staff vote on their predictions. And I had Bills Niners with Bills winning it as my Super Bowl. So I'm just going to stick with that.
That's nice. I like that. I wish I could go back to my – I know obviously people remind me all the time I had the Bengals in the Super Bowl. But so be it. Never again. No matter what. Mm-hmm. Never again. Get ready for that. And I think judging by your responses to me, everyone is begging me never again to do that. Don't make them go through that again. I've got this weekend, I'll run them down for you. I got Kansas City over Miami. Miami is just in a free fall. And now they got to go play in the cold. I don't believe in Kansas City. I'm not buying Kansas City. Miami's not in their current state. I got Houston over Cleveland because I'm buying CJ Stroud. Dave, Houston is giving me 21 Bengals vibes. I'm telling you. CJ Stroud in his rookie year, big adjusted net yards per attempt. By the way, anybody that makes fun of me when I talk about adjusted net yards per attempt being the factor, top eight qualifying in adjusted net yards per attempt this year quarterbacks, guess where they all are? Every one of them in the playoffs. It's all that matters. Mm-hmm. Have a powerful, efficient passing game. It's what gets you there. It's what matters. Okay. Now, granted, it's mostly because they're the only ones that survived a full season and qualified. But that, you know, it's I'm just telling you. CJ Stroud third in that stat, and I think Houston's dangerous.
They are, and what gets lost in all the Stroud hype is their defense is really nice. And he does it. It doesn't matter what receivers, not that Nico Collins is a bad receiver, but how many different receivers have had big days for him this year?
I just wish they had Tank Dell.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
That's a nice combo.
I think that's the difference maker. Yeah, not having Nico and Tank with each other in the playoffs, I think is inevitably their downfall.
Yeah.
But I think they have enough to beat Cleveland. So I haven't beaten Cleveland. I have Buffalo beating Pittsburgh. Then in the divisional round, Buffalo over Kansas City, who, again, I just not believing in Kansas City this year. I think you saw that if you watched the Bengals against them. I have Baltimore over Houston in a freaking barn burner. I think Houston's going to give Baltimore everything they want and more. And Baltimore, given their history of in Lamar's MVP year of not winning, having problems winning in the playoffs, and that's the one thing hanging over them. If Houston makes it interesting, it could get real tight at M&T Bank Stadium in a year they're hoping to win it all. That game could be scary. Houston and Baltimore. Same if Cleveland wins that, which is very obviously very possible. Then I have Baltimore over Buffalo in the championship game. I got Rams over Detroit, in which the most fun game of the weekend, I think, by all accounts. For Detroit's sake, I hope they win and they get that moment like Bengals fans had when they beat the Raiders, because it's special. Players, you know, in exit meetings yesterday, Dave, talking about how, you know, they still will never forget the stadium that night. And I feel that way too. I think fans remember that, and I wish that for Detroit fans who have been through it, and deserve it, and Jared Goff, who deserves it, being cast aside by the Rams and to be able to stick it to them and deliver a championship when Stafford never could, when they traded to get Stafford over top of them. You got to love that crap right there. So I'm here for Detroit, but I think the Rams win.
That city still loves Stafford too. So it's just such a great matchup. It's one of those
fantastic.
Everything fell perfectly.
Yep. I got Tampa over Philly, who's just in a scary free fall. Dallas over Green Bay, although upset alert on that one. Jordan Love, the way he's playing. Dallas, the way they always choke. I mean, Green Bay's defense stinks too much, but if they can just find a way to get a couple turnovers and take advantage of some Dallas chokage, I think Jordan Love could do it. But I'm picking Dallas. I think Dallas wins, but I like Green Bay on the cover on that one. I got San Francisco over the Rams, Dallas over Tampa Bay, San Francisco over Dallas. And then I think San Francisco flips the script in the Super Bowl. I have San Francisco beating Baltimore in the championship. So that's my predictions on the record here today for you, Dave.
Well done. You kind of went with chalk on that Super Bowl, though.
Well, I think they're so far better than everyone.
You're right.
I think they'll get scared, but I just think this is the year that chalk makes sense. There's a lot of years where I'm not buying chalk that it feels wide open. I don't think it feels very wide open.
It sure feels like this is the year Baltimore has put it together. I know you mentioned their playoff woes, but man, they are just hitting on all cylinders.
But I think their woes were because of the way they were built, not around the passing game. That's how you win in this time of year. You got to have that powerful, efficient passing game. And that's what they have because Todd Monken has leaned into that because that's definitely how you win. And that's why so many AFC North teams haven't won besides the way the Bengals did in the postseason, because they've all played this defense and run game crap that loses in January. Look at what happens. That's why, again, these efficient passing games are the key to winning this time of year. Don't buy the it's cold, run it stuff. All right. On that note, I think we've done enough. I'm losing my voice over the course of one episode. And so I don't know that I have any further that I can go with it other than for my Arby's to say one last thank you to everybody for going with it this year. I kind of mentioned this in the walkout, but like, it's been a tough year for us on the Bengals beat here and keeping this podcast alive. And it was really hard to do without Jay, and we miss Jay dearly every day but we tried to keep it going and try to keep it fun. And you guys have been the reason that it's been that, because you've stayed listening, you've stayed engaging, you've cared, and you've treated Dave like a quality stepdad with respect.
No one called child services or tried to swat me or anything.
And I want to thank you, Dave, for stepping in, even though you give yourself a hard time here and we joke about the stepdad thing. You stepped in because without you, no, this is not existing at all. I'm not talking to myself. No one wants to hear me talk to myself. Every episode would sound like that one that sounded like I was having a stroke and people were concerned. And without you here in giving up your time and engaging and doing all this, we never would have had it. So thank you for doing this all year.
It's been fun.
So I can keep this alive. I've enjoyed it. And you know, it's brought new juice and ways to it. So, but thank you everybody that's been with us this year. It's been fun. We're going to keep going, of course, into the off season, but the cadence changes a little bit as we kind of get into more one per week with emergencies if necessary. And if I, you know, when I've come across things, or we will get into dive into certain topics, we're going to do that. But you know, we're going to get more into that off season feel here. And I plan on taking a little bit of time off here. If Dave will let me, even just for a little bit. I know there's high expectations.
Well, we have a whole
new system. We're going to do it.
We have a whole new system I don't understand, so I probably can't okay it anyhow for you. So
there you go. There's a little inside baseball for you. Anybody that's worked in any office ever, when you have to switch over systems of like doing the office work, never goes well. But we're working on it. We're working on it. So if I can ever declare my PTO, I will take some. On that note, thank you to everybody for listening. Appreciate it. And we will catch up with you next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.